Blog Talk Radio.
George Dixon used to talk, we talked a lot about this state of mind that we're all getting on to, you know, it's starting, it's been happening for a long time. Now it's pretty much here, you know. Probably the best way to understand this is by, I can explain it. I wrote this week, and kind of, was worried about the 21st of this month, being this, of course, the winter solstice, but also more so being the final day of the Mayan calendar. And commemorating the new era, the Age of Aquarius. And I wanted to talk a little about that tonight. Maybe we can get into Aquarius. But we will. But I'd like to read this first and kind of get you into the mood before we start to envision the Aquarian Age. This essay, again, is entitled The Time of No Time. If you go to my website, it's right on the front page. The Mayans did not predict doomsday on December 21st, 2012. They predicted the merge of humanity into a new era and age when human consciousness will ascend to universal understanding. The Mayans call this time the Universal Age, the final stage of humanity's third dimensional consciousness. Those of us who study this transition have been experiencing it for several years. We see evidence of it all around us in the great technological and spiritual advancements, in archaeological discoveries, and the awakening of political consciousness. We are witnessing the collapse of time and space when all artificial systems end as we approach the zero-point merge, when space and gravity merge, and the Mayans understood that the Earth is imprisoned in time and space, unlike other advanced planets where inhabitants have escaped their prison by their evolved consciousness. We have entered that time of no time. The Mayans understood this when they created their calendar. They state that they were given the calendar of creation by God. They had two calendars, one of creation and the other of the planetary cycles. The creation calendar begins 1.6 billion years ago, when the Earth was first formed, and predicts through astronomy and astrology the 13 evolutionary steps of humanity. The second calendar was 290 days and was intricately interrelated with the creation calendar. Together, they structured the Mayans' lives. Each day was celebrated, and everyone born on a certain day was given a name and profession astrologically suited for that day. The Gregorian calendar was designed to destroy all indigenous calendars and religions as well as beliefs in astrology. Creating the Gregorian calendar and militarily imposing it on the world, the Catholic Church enslaved humanity in their prison of time and redirected the focus of world population by rearranging the natural lunar cycles into artificial measurements to impede the evolutionary rise of human consciousness. The Gregorian calendar is a labyrinth designed to misdirect our natural focus on enlightenment toward fear and force us to worship false gods and icons by religious ceremonies and celebrations performed only on certain days of the week, month, and year according to the Gregorian calendar. Why the Sabbath or Sunday became the day of worship was the same idea. Prior to the new calendar, humanity worshipped their Creator every day. They made prayers and offerings whenever their hearts and minds felt the need. Worshipping God on the Sabbath is a Judaic-Christian mandate. The biblical account of a seven-day creation and God rested on the seventh day was the Judaic illusion of time. Science proves the Earth was created billions of years ago, as was the entire universe. Scientists told today have suspended time in their experiments and are creating new ways to extend human life. But science is subordinated or status by religion and deliberately ignored as the key to immortality. We have the inherent power to heal ourselves. We cannot deny miracles happen every day around the world. And we who have had miracles happen in our lives understand the great gift we were given. What we believe to be truth is not. One of the great cosmic laws states all truth is half-truth. What we know as fact is only what we know, not what remains to be known, and is hidden from us by our denial of the deception of others. The truth of time is that it does not exist. It is an illusion. To some people, time is quick, and for others, it can be eternal. How can people truly understand what time is? The illusion of time creates great stresses in their lives. That is why the creation of time was paramount for gaining complete control of human activity. All industry, commerce, and governments operate on time. Days, minutes, seconds, even nanoseconds have been created to continue the illusion. Anyone who believes their lives are not controlled by time are living in complete denial. Every second we work for an employer is counted. Every thought or action we have or take is restricted in some way by time. What day we begin something or go somewhere or achieve a goal or meet a deadline is determined on time. Taxes are due every month, year, quarter. Payments on cars and homes, phones, electricity, and credit cards are due every month. Schools, businesses, and governments are closed on certain days between certain hours. Lives begin and end at certain times announced by doctors or coroners or others. Everything we do is structured by time, restraints imposed upon us. Once we understand the illusion of time, we realize we can never be late or early. We can never miss an appointment. Time is the veil in front of our eyes that prevents us from seeing who and what operates this vast illusion. If life is immortal, then why should anyone worry about time? We have eternity to live. Eternity is endless. It is timeless. We are told by religious leaders and their scriptures that our spirits are immortal. But only they can judge where we spend eternity, either in the fires of hell or the arms of God in heaven. Once we understand their riddle, we realize no one can tell us where we will spend eternity. The entire concept of some man-made institution or religious despot judging us and dictating our eternal destiny is absurd. Those who live in the illusion of time are focused on their watches, clocks, and calendars. Those who understand the illusion of time are immortal. I know I've bent some noses there, that one, but I can't help myself. When I think of this time that we're in, this time of no time, we have no time. There's no time left, all right? We have no time. Break through that illusion. It's so difficult to do because it's so well structured. So intricately weaved into our lives and our patterns of our lives that we can't break away from it. Even though we're teased and tempted and the carrot in front of us saying that, oh, our life lives are, our life is immortal, and God is in us, and we'll always live on, and but yet we die and die painfully. And why is that? You know, why? Of course, the why is the great question. And I'm at a point now in my life where I have to question everything, you know, that doesn't quite make sense to me. And because I've taken so many things for granted, I've taken so much knowledge, so much wisdom, so much everything, and, you know, ignored it, misinterpreted it, misread it, and have come to the conclusion that I, you know, I've missed a lot, you know. But what I've really missed is the true indulgence into a wonderful thought, or researching something that just phenomenal, something that just is wondrous, you know. Or you know, well, that's why people spend their lives, you know, researching certain things and finding, you know, seeking knowledge their entire lives. I have always, but and always do. But I, you know, what I'm saying is that, well, maybe this explains it better. I read this on my last week's show, last Thursday night show. I'm going to read it again. I'm pretty sure I read it last Thursday, but I'm going to read it again because I want to it's called self-abandonment, and this is the precursor to the pre-essay to the one I just read, which is The Time of No Time, because essentially, in order for us to grasp the great concept of mystical freedom, I throw that in there, mystical, because it's beyond philosophical, it's beyond sacred, it's beyond anything that we know, and it falls in the realms of mysticism, you know, which is, you know, mystery, but to the mystic, it's not a mystery any longer. It's the magnetic attraction that one has to his creator. Boundless faith. For some reason, I'm not sure. I can't say. I should say studied mysticism for a good portion of my life, at least 40 years, and I think I've come to the understanding, reading all the texts and all the mystics and so many of them. I can say I'm sure there are many I missed, but based on the I always try to anchor mysticism with a philosophy, you know, a personal philosophy, because I knew that in some way, whatever my philosophy in life was, would have to be um I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to state that it had to have some logical, everything has to have some strangely logical sense to it for me to grasp it. That's normal. I think everybody has to have some logic, you know, in their grasping of things. But, you know, I've talked to people who have absolutely no logic and just ramble on and make no sense, like what I do once in a while. But what I'm trying to get at is that at first we have to have that basis. We have to have the intellectual basis for our furthering our studies, you know, furthering our research, furthering our desire to go on in a certain direction. And of course, as you get through these stages of research and you find out, you create a magnetic storm around you. All right. I guess that's what it is. It's like maybe like a tornado. You become like a tornado, okay? And whipping an intellectual tornado, whipping up everything and everybody in your pathway, you know, to get to wherever you're going. And oddly enough, I was that way. I was a tornado, I guess, because, and as much as I was right, I was wrong. I was right in my assumptions, wrong in my approach to them. But over the years, I've mellowed some. You can look back at my early writings, 10 years ago. No, not 10, about 8 years ago now that were published. And you'll find that my, over time, my angst and my sarcasm and my cynicism started to peel away some. And I find myself now in 2012 looking back, and I can look back at myself of what I wrote back in 2004 or 2005 and still enjoy that, enjoy reading it, because it had there was a real sense of rage that I expressed at that time. Also in my book, my book Naked at the Mic, there was an extreme rage in that book that I expressed. But yet at the same time, there's truth there. Truth, because I can go back and look at it and say, yes, I touched on it. And not only that, I can find myself, my predictions that I made, my statements, all were true and all came true. All right? And oddly enough, we're here today, and I'm looking back and going, well, that's interesting. That's interesting. But perhaps the most important aspect of any mystical life, and I can't say that mine is. I just say that it's that, or that I am. I just say that I'm a man who appreciates those who are. I'm a man who appreciates where the mystical mind is, you know, because I know that I've touched it. I know that I've seen it. I know that I've felt it. But in my own life, my own fears are still there. Fears based upon self-doubt. Fears based upon not trusting myself and God, right, enough. Once you become a mystic, and I say that in all sense of the word, all great sense of the word, you are connected. You are totally connected to the prime creator, to the source of all life. And when you are connected in that way, it breaks apart all illusion. All illusion is broken. Because you know, you instinctively know that you're here for this purpose, and you are you will leave here. You will leave here eventually and move on. Move on to some greater consciousness. You know, you're bound to, because you're crossing over. You're going to know. All right? You're going to know. And I've read enough to believe that we do come back into this life. We are reincarnated. But we are reincarnated not involuntarily, but voluntarily. We come back into the third dimensional plane. We leave it for unknown periods of time, and then decide to come back and experience something else. Because, how can I say, once your time is up, your time's up, it's done, you're gone. Where do you go? And where you go is where you want to go, basically. You go to the next level. You go to the next level of your life. And you leave the rest behind. It is all planned. It is all a part of living. It's all part of nature. It's all part of the cycles of nature and what we live under. So that in itself is an illusion. And I speak about that in this article. That we live on two parallel dimensions. And the reason that it's paralleled is because it's been split, deliberately split, all right? And we are here in a third dimensional consciousness that mirrors a fourth dimensional consciousness, all right? And we have imprisoned ourselves. We have been imprisoned, and we imprison ourselves into believing that this is all we are, this is all it is, this is all that exists. When we know in our hearts and our minds and our souls that we are far more than this. We're just going through hard times, or we're going through good times, or we're going through whatever we're going through in this world, and it's only temporary. It's temporal. It's like sand, you know? And we live for eternity. So if we live for eternity, we can have eternal number of lives. You know? Or one single life, whichever we choose. So, before I go further, I want to read this. I want to read this entitled "Self-Abandonment," and what it essentially states. Is that we're living under an illusion. And the only way, and it's the illusion of self, but the only way that we can rid ourselves from that illusion is to discover, is to abandon ourselves. It's an abandon ourselves. As a student, teacher, sales trainer, financial and real estate broker, author, writer, musician, artist, poet, documentary filmmaker, producer, director, television and radio show host, I was who I was. All of the titles I gave to myself and those that were given to me were descriptions of who I was. They were labels of my professional identity. They identified me. I was dependent on these labels to know who I was. I now live my life in self-abandonment. I have moved beyond who I was into an alternative self. Apart from my past and labeled identity, I travel through a parallel dimension where my life mirrors what I want it to be. I became aware of the possibility that a parallel dimension existed. The anchors that held me in one dimension kept me from entering into the parallel dimension. Quantum physics proves it exists. I have been there before. I visit it daily in my daydreams and sleep. How I differ from my present existence is that nothing in the parallel dimension is mundane. It is exciting. It's pleasurable. It's physically, intellectually, spiritually stimulating without barriers, anchors, or any restrictions. We can win at everything we undertake. We can fly as high as our imaginations carry us. We can create anything we desire. The parallel dimension does exist, but we do not live in it completely. The reason we do not is because we are unable or unwilling to accept that it exists. Physicists and psychics have proven the existence of multiple dimensions and that everyone does enter this parallel dimension, but are unaware that they do. The trappings of their reality of work, children, home, and daily stresses are constant reminders of what they must cope with. But on occasion, everyone experiences self-abandonment. Whenever we daydream, or when we fall asleep in our beds, or when the world around us is quiet and we wonder about where we are and want to be, we enter the parallel dimension. Every time we enter this parallel dimension, we feel at ease and comfortable when we arrive. Our minds are focused on what we are doing or want to do there. It relieves us of the constant irritants of our lives, and for those special moments we enter that dimension, we are free. No one can deny they have been there. They simply do not understand where they have been. Nature has provided us with everything we need to enjoy this parallel dimension. It sings to us in the songs of birds, it dazzles our eyes with its beauty. It howls to us in the baying of wolves. It inspires us to understand the polarity of our lives as it mirrors our thoughts and attracts our attention by the marvels that it displays for us. We live in it and around it, but we will not accept it for this gift that it is. We too often destroy it or ignore it by our herd-like impulses. We run as masses of mindless animals in fear or frenzy toward some mirage of security. Like a herd of sheep or cattle, we are led by herders to fresh grazing fields or to slaughter. Herds could easily ignore their herders or turn on them and trample them. The herders are well trained and keep their herds behind fences and brand them with their mark, and how to keep the individual spirited bulls or rams isolated from the herd. They understand that the wild spirits of these great animals must not go unchallenged, or the herds will realize their collective and individual strength and become impossible to control. Governments try to control all media and knowledge and oppress us and imprison us by destroying the mirror of our parallel dimension. replacing its image with bombs and pollution, death, misery, and fear. Self-abandonment is the way we protect ourselves from mundane and grim realities. We are created with an escape hatch that allows us to always be free. Our self-made prison is dark, and we believe we are in bondage and convince ourselves we are blind. We fail to see the escape hatch within us that leads to the parallel dimension and to our ultimate freedom. And the interesting thing about being about this self-abandonment, and I'm not the one who came up with that idea, believe me, but I mean, it's, in fact, I remember reading it very well, and Emerson might have been one of the first to talk about it in depth. I believe it was in The Oversoul that he said, that we must abandon ourselves, in order to transcend. And he was a transcendentalist. Understanding that mystical state of mind, where you are transcending the known dimension into another dimension, into another consciousness, into another world, if you will. And by doing that, gain this understanding, some form of understanding from that altered dimension that you visit and bring back with you. And we do this all the time. I can't tell you how many times I've had dreams, countless dreams that have led me to some inspiration or faith or hope or whatever it may be. Or unlock the key to an answer, or to a question that I had. For some reason, in that fourth dimensional state of sleep, or as a daydream or whatever, we can escape our. We escape into the fourth dimension. But the thing is, people don't realize when they sleep, where are they going? Where do they go for 8 hours or more? They leave this dimension. Their bodies are breathing. Their bodies are alive. But they're asleep or they're sitting still. You know? I don't know anybody who in a dream, whose body isn't really limp. His mind is racing, but his body is sleeping. He's sleeping. So if you're out dead, so because you've left your body and you're in a spiritual state. And then, again, when the alarm clock rings or whatever it is, or you program your own programming, you program yourself to come back into this body, come back into this conscious state, and you wake up. And there are so many ways to put you into that state. Man is an expert at that, between liquor and drugs and whatever. He's found ways to... get into that crossover, if you will, all right, into an alternative state, to where he's no longer sober, he's drunk in the spirit, if you will, and we've been there. I've been drunk in the spirit many, many times, too many to. Too many way to count in my life, and I appreciated almost all of them. But the most important bridge, if you will, that you cross between this dimension and the next is that bridge of self-confidence in who you are, what you are, what you want to be. And once that is crystallized within your pineal gland, in your third eye, that's all you see. You know, that's what drives you in this world. It drives you to that potential, that possibility. Whatever the possibility is it's wealth, or if it's romance, or if it's mysticism, or if it's whatever it is, we are all compelled by that third eye vision, okay, which is the vision into the parallel dimension, the universal dimension, the one that is just pure creation, pure pure desire and motivation and pure thought. It's what we are, as opposed to what we are here, which is a lot of flesh and blood and pain and misery and some joy, yes, joy, peace, joy, fun, exhilaration. But all in a body, if you will, all imprisoned within this secular world, and we fail to reach out. Artists reach out, musicians reach out, poets, writers, filmmakers. I mean, anybody in the creative field know that where they get their inspiration is not here. It's a tap. You're tapping into your their subconscious. You're tapping into that other dimension. You're not using this limited mindset, this third dimensional reference point. What you're doing is you've transcended into the cosmic realm, into the wonders of the universe, you know, into spiritual, marvelous, exhilarating place. And by doing so, that's where all of our ideas come from. That's where our music comes from. That's, you know, the good, even the bad stuff. I mean, it's coming from somewhere, you know. You're hearing it. It's only through the great filters, the filtering process that allows you to identify the message that is meant for you to hear. And that was something that always stuck in my mind. In fact, I made it the opening statement in my book, which was a quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson. He says, whatever you were meant to hear, you will hear. I forget the exact quote, but that's what he meant. And you will hear it because it will come to you in winding ways. It will come to you. And let me see if I can find that quote. I should have had it ready. I do this sometimes. I just fall into an idea. But let me see where it is here. Hold on. by the way, if you're interested, you can go to my website. You see my book, Naked at the Mic. You want to get something wonderful for Christmas for somebody, you can order it right there on my site from Amazon. Just click on the book, picture of the book. It goes right to the Amazon page. Let me read this quickly. O believe as thou livest that every sound that is spoken over the round world, which thou oughtest to hear, will vibrate on thine ear. That was The Oversoul, first series by Ralph Waldo Emerson. That's how I began my book, and right in the introduction. But the important thing to remember is that we learn we'll never know everything, nor care to know everything. We know some things, but the one thing that we don't know too well is ourselves. Where we fall and where we step, why we fall, why we fail, why we do this. And the reason we do is because we doubt. The reason we do is because of who we think we are. You know? Oh, I'm a writer. Yeah, well, what the hell? You know, what's a writer? You know? The description of ourselves is far too vague. It has to be because we can't put ourselves into a mold. We're not designed that way. We have unbelievable number of interests. In the United States, people go through eight different careers in their lives until they find the right one. Or sometimes they never do. But I, on the other hand, have been through a lot of different areas, all under one mega life, I guess, one life. And I found all the areas I go into are all areas that I'm fascinated by and want to do something in and create something in and, you know, develop a business in or develop, you know, something. And I did. And I failed and I've succeeded and I've failed again and so on. And everybody does that. But the reason that we do is because we realize all the things that we thought we were, we aren't. They're all just a part of us. They're not who we are or what we are. They're just a part of what we are in this fractal world that we live in, if you will. Because what makes up who we are is the collective thought processes that we generate within ourselves. What we're thinking of every day, what we're doing every day, how we're doing it every day, what's firing and what's misfiring in us, you know, that is who we are. So what you have to understand is that once you reach that level where you understand you are who you are, then everything else becomes irrelevant, you know. Everything that you've done and took pride in doing was always, you know, was great. But it's not. You move on from there. You know, you don't have to stay there. You know, it's like drilling a dry well. You know, you got to move on to different areas. That's why six very successful businessmen have many different businesses. You know, not just one. They have many. They're divested, and that's what we. ourselves, all right, of the dregs of our personality, and invest, all right, in the best of our personalities. And that is whatever it is that we enjoy doing that's constructive and that is beneficial to us and others, to, you know, to create, to indulge our senses in the giving of birth, to something that was never there before. And that's the magic that mankind is. That's the magic of nature, you know. That's the magic that we are. Because what we do is we create. We are creators. We are co-creators with the universe. We create each day. We create each minute, every second of our lives. We are creating. Because we can end our own lives. But the one thing we can't do is we can't create our own lives. We can't create this third dimensional thing. We can't create ourselves because we've already been created. So what does that mean? Well, it means that the prime creator, the God, the creator, created us. But he created us with the gift of co-creation. We can create with him through the primary example of here, I am part of you, I created you, you can move on and create children, you can create business, you can create any art, you can create whatever you desire. And that's the wonderful gift that we have, and that's the one gift that we are so willing to give away without realizing what a gift it is. You know, we give away our genius, we give away our health, we give away our wealth, we give away everything because we're deluded by whatever that delusion may be, you know. Choose it. It's everything, you know. Alcohol, gambling, pornography, violence. God knows, you know. Just every vice that we can think of takes that much away from us. But at the same time, I'm going to make a plug for vice because I've got plenty of them. The incredible thing about vices is that maybe they're slight addictions or maybe they're full addictions, but what they do is they ease the pain. They ease they have that momentary ease of tension, that momentary ease of that you get when you are totally bored or you don't know what you're doing. Then the only first thing you think about is pleasuring yourself to this extent of having, of eating or drinking or having sex or, you know, having whatever, something that is physically appealing to you and satisfying. And, you know, and of course that boredom can lead to other things as well, much more debilitating vices other than, you know, an occasional drink or something. Or even a very common, often drink, is much worse. So I guess what I'm going to try to put across tonight is that from what I can see, we're end of the world coming as a doomsday, to the extent that it ends everything, because it doesn't. It doesn't end everything. Aquarius. The age of Aquarius is an astrological term denoting either the current or upcoming astrological age. Depending on the method of calculation, astrologers maintain that an astrological age is a product of the Earth's slow precessional rotation and lasts for 2,150 years on average. In popular culture in the United States, the age of Aquarius refers to the advent of hippies and the New Age movement in the 1960s and 70s. There are various methods of calculating the length of the astrological age. In sun sign astrology, the first sign is Aries, followed by Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, Leo, Virgo, Libra, Scorpio, Sagittarius, Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces, whereupon the cycle returns to Aries and through the zodiacal signs again. Astrological ages, however, proceed in the opposite direction, retrograde in astronomy. Therefore, the age of Aquarius follows the age of Pisces. And it goes into a lot of technical terms and so on, but so just understand that we're entering this new era. But if we stay away from the all the pat answers, all the, you know, rationalizations of it, you know, that we're going to stay here and this is going to be there. I can attest to you, we're not there anymore. Anybody listening to this program isn't there anymore. We're not in the third dimension anymore. That's why I often introduce this program as the fourth dimension, the gateway to the fourth dimension, you know. That's what I try to make it. But I want you to leave the show tonight by thinking of who you are, possibly going back. If you want to read those articles, they're right there on my website, right on the front pages, or, you know, go right into them. But it's so easy to throw doom and gloom around. That's what we respond to. It's much harder to throw joy, happiness, enlightenment, you know, freedom, liberty is beyond to imagine. It's much harder to believe that for some reason than it is to believe in the gloom and doom, even though it's the same process to believe in one or the other. I personally believe that we are going to transcend into that other dimension as an entire world, right? Because the new age will bring that upon us. And all the environmental changes that come with that, and the polar shift and the, you know, these other aspects of this year, of the coming, this year and the coming year. So the one last remaining prophecy that's so far been unfulfilled of the Hopi prophecies is the coming of the blue planet. And that is destined to arrive sometime toward the middle or end of next year. And it's going to be larger than the moon. Larger than the moon as it comes into our orbit. And even though it's a comet, but speculated as a planet. And it's going to light up the skies. And this is what the Hopis have predicted. It's going to be so big, so vast, it's going to draw us to it. And at that moment, we'll ascend. Now that's the Hopi prophecy. And I like that. But, you know, we'll look forward to next year. So
the Hopis didn't say it was ending this year. It is ending whatever it is, and the astronomers have said it's coming. It's coming, and it'll be in our visual sight within the next year. So within a year from now. That'll be fascinating to see. So let's go on from there. And I just want to thank you for, it's already an hour, which is another illusion. You know, the time is an illusion, you know. But in a way, I come to do this show at 8 o'clock and try to finish it around 9. But in essence, I could have done the show at any time, but today or, you know, yesterday or today and tomorrow, that's where my head's been at lately, trying to you know, in self-abandonment. Whether that can be understood, determined by my listeners, by me, I guess. But I want to thank everybody who's listened to these shows and been wonderful audiences. So we'll get many, many thousands of people who've listened to these programs, and I'm very grateful to them. I want to thank my website readers. Been remarkable. Last month, I noted that I had readers from over 120 different countries. That's phenomenal. I'm so pleased to see that my work attracts people from all languages and all cultures. And must be something there. But I thank you again for listening, and that's the last show for the week. Please join Lila and myself next Tuesday, Wednesday, and myself on Thursday of next week. And I hope you're enjoying the Christmas season, and I hope everybody is safe and warm. And good night.